Hey, Soil Nation, welcome back. This is episode 13 of the Topsoil Podcast. We are on part two of our first farmer highlight series. We are talking with Michael Vitito, a Washington County farmer in Iowa, who is interested in interseeding as well as layering enterprises. You can follow Michael at Vitito761 on Twitter, as well as follow his whole journey at cubiclefarmrefugee.blogspot.com. Always wants a cookie, like it's a cookie recipe, right?
Yeah.
What's my recipe? So maybe that's really hard to do because of what you touched on just from where you're at climate-wise. But maybe just kind of touch on just a little bit, like what are some rules of thumbs that you've learned? Like you said, you know, radishes later, good. Radishes early, bad. Maybe what are some of those for that V1 as you kind of approach later in that V cycle or growth stage? What are you telling guys from a rule of thumb?
It's a real balancing act on weed control. That's probably the toughest part about it. You know, so but that needs to be a high priority for you, regardless of what you're looking to do, whether you're interseeding or not. You know, you need to have a good weed control program, but that's even more challenging in an interseeding situation. But what we found when we did the pre-emerge method was weed control was a big challenge. And you know what we did was we started with the burn down and came back with some residual after things were established, but anything that started growing, you know, whether it was buttonweeds or water hemp or whatever, between when we sprayed our burn down and got the residual out there, that stuff had free rein to go nuts throughout the season. So we had some problems with that. So the earlier you go with your interseeding, the more difficult your weed control program is gonna be. You know, the later you go, the closer to a standard weed control program that you can have, you know, with regards to, you know, your post-pass being closer to corn
and everything else. So that's kind of a balancing point that you have to find and kind of get a feel for on your own operation. As far as weed control goes. Now, as far as species go, you know, I feel like you can pretty much bank on not having any competition from
full season legumes like your clovers and whatnot, as long as you're putting them in after you plant your corn. You know, I wouldn't recommend going out and frost seeding them and planting corn into that and expecting not to have any competition from it, but I feel like those are probably not going to be real competitive, but they're also going to be harder to get established if you're on the back half of the window. So so that's a problem, and they're more typically they're going to be a small seeded plant, so they're going to be harder to get through your residual herbicide programs. So that's kind of where we've developed our program into what we're looking to do in 2018, which is we're focusing more on large seeded plants and getting even more into the warm season legumes and you know, kind of focusing on those species and just species in general that are highly mycorrhizal. I think that's a big thing when you're interseeding, and what that means is they'll develop relationships with the mycorrhizal fungi, which is one of the species of soil bacteria or soil biology in there, and so that what that does is it will help with nutrient sharing and nutrient availability for your cash crop as well as with the cover crop. So what we're doing is, you know, we're looking at species that have the larger seeds. You know, we're trying to find species that are even on label for our residual herbicides, you know, whether that be Dual or Callisto or what have you, you know. So for example, Dual, which is S-metolachlor, has pretty much every type of bean and pea on the label, and so those types of species are gonna have a better time getting through that residual than a smaller seeded species like a clover or something, which is essentially what Dual is really good at controlling.
So then you can still utilize herbicides, you can still get rid of the species of plants that you don't want, but then bigger seeds that are more resilient.
Yep.
That can get through.
Yep. And then the big thing, you know, when you've got these legumes in the mix, the whole reason that you want these legumes in there essentially is for nitrogen fixation. That's kind of their claim to fame, if you will. But in order for them to be fixing nitrogen, essentially can't be a huge excess of nitrogen available to them in the soil. And so that's where nitrogen placement in your fields becomes a big deal. You know, if you can keep it indexed to your corn row, like with a strip till type situation or a wide drop type situation or however you can do it, I think is going to be a lot better for the legumes to be nodulating. They'll actually nodulate. And you just, you know, I think it's a good idea in general to not make your corn plant have to go through your covers to get to that nitrogen. I think that's, you know,
right,
kind of
there where they want.
Kind of asking for trouble in my mind. Now, we haven't had that situation occur in our fields yet where we've been able to have it indexed to the row, because we're either drag hosing manure or we were side dressing liquid with a Coulter rig, and so we were either, you know, had it kind of all willy-nilly all over the place with the drag hose on an angle, or we had it banded right down the middle of the covers last year. How much of that was an issue or whatnot, I don't know, but I haven't had great luck getting the legumes to nodulate on the interseeding stuff, and I think that's a big component or a big reason on why that is. But you know, I know like Lauren up in West Union, he's had nodules on his stuff interseeding, and he does a lot better of a job getting his nitrogen indexed to the row. So I think all that stuff kind of is some stuff that you really have to start looking at a lot harder when you're looking to use a system like this.
So what would be, I guess, kind of now first step advice going into other people? Like, kind of what's the main take? You know, what's the number one takeaway kind of point from all this? Somebody new looking at it, trying to get diversity going.
The number one thing I can tell you, start small.
Like a few acres?
A few acres, somewhere that is readily accessible for you so you can keep an eye on it. Because if you just put it out there and it's in the back 40 somewhere that you're never going to go look at it, you're probably not going to learn very much from it. So, like, I like to have some of my experiments right behind my house, so I go look at it literally every single day and just keep an eye on things and take pictures of it easily, and then I can reference that stuff later. So that's a big thing, you know. If you're going to do this stuff, make it so you can learn from your experiences instead of just, oh, I'm going to go put it out there and just look at my yield maps on the combine afterwards to tell me if it was a success or not. You know, that's,
you have to really manage
it. You need to, well, yeah, we need to, you know, that goes back to what Trent was talking about with the recipe thing. That's, you know, this type of farming isn't your cookbook type of farming where, you know, the co-op gives you a recipe on what to follow.
Yeah, it's not a numerical equation.
Yeah, you
gotta,
you know, it's kind of like you look at the difference of knowing how to cook and knowing how to follow a recipe. You know, there's a difference there. So knowing how to farm and knowing how to follow advice from a co-op is two different things. And you really got to know how to farm adaptively in order to use this type of system.
So then we had a bit of some audio troubles in the middle there, kind of when we were talking about chemicals. So I just want to make sure that if we did have some troubles right at that point, that guys are interested in that, because that's one of the first questions that we hear. Nothing super elaborate, but what have you found out from a chemical plan side on these interseeding? Because you have to change your chemical program, most likely. You're not organic.
Correct.
So if we, you know, you're in an organic system, obviously that's different. But but for guys that are in conventional or no-till systems that are going to do some interseeding, what kind of what have you learned from the chemical side?
The best advice I can give on that, and you know, this is going to vary with, there's countless different herbicide programs you can go with, but for us, like when we started in 2016, we were using atrazine and acetachlor as a pre-emerge on our corn acres in general. And so what we did was we went in and just used a half rate of what we would normally use for that. So that's something guys can look at, is using a partial rate of whatever residual herbicide program you're going out with on your pre. But you really need to kind of do your homework on that. And Penn State has some good research on the different herbicide programs and how they affect some of these species and whatnot. But it turns out that the atrazine and acetachlor combo was a pretty good combo for those guys over there at Penn State. And so it just so worked out that that's what we were using anyways. So it was pretty convenient. We didn't have any trouble with it when we were using that program, but to go back to what we're doing for 2018, is a lot of the species I'm looking to go with are actually on label for the residual herbicides that we're using. So that's a big thing, you know, that I've kind of picked up on, is study your labels. Don't just look at the corn or the soybean section of the label. You know, look at everything else that it's labeled for, and then try and come up with some species that are out there that would be in that category. You know, like we talked about dual earlier. Well, that's labeled for essentially every single bean and pea out there. So there's your warm season legumes. They fall right into that category.
So real quick, tell them what your chem program is this year for the guy that's got the notepad written to write it down.
So this year for 2018, all right, it's pretty complicated. A quart and a half of Acuron pre. That's it for the pre.
And Acuron's a new Syngenta product.
So Acuron is a Syngenta product, and that consists of atrazine, dual, Callisto, and then the crazy bicyclopyrene or whatever it is, group 27 active that you only get in Acuron. So a full rate of Acuron is 3 quarts, but it's labeled to apply a quart and a half pre. So that's what we're going with, and that's actually what we're going with on all of our corn acres, so it's pretty convenient. We don't have to do anything different for our interseed stuff. So again, that goes back to where I was talking about, like the dual label and looking at the Callisto label. Like flax is on the Callisto label. You know, you can use Callisto as a pre for flax, so that ties in there really well. But then we're just coming back with glyphosate post, you know, the day before we interseed is the plan, to clean up anything that got through that. Now, I'm probably going to try some experiments where I come back and do like a full-on Halux GT type pass and then interseed into that. So it would be literally our exact standard herbicide program. And then seeing how the interseeded stuff will come through that, where, you know, we're putting out more dual, more Callisto, more Roundup, or Roundup in general, and then atrazine as well. So that's kind of the stuff I'm playing with this year. I think we'll have good luck with it. I know some other people that have had good luck with that type of a program with the larger seeded cover species. So, yeah.
Well, so we'll get into more in our roundtable here too on, you know, for tomorrow's episode on where all this is going. My last burning question for today that we got you here, Michael, is, are cover crops the best thing since wide mouth can?
Oh man, I don't know. This is wide mouth can right here that I got, Keystone Light, wide mouth. It's pretty nice.
Shout out to
But
So we dealt with this in our first week, you know. I mean, this is it right here. This is the Keystone Light advertiser of Washington County. Yeah,
that's right.
Man.
If you're gonna drink cheap, or if you're gonna drink shitty beer, at least drink cheap shitty beer.
Now we're gonna have to mark this explicit.
Yeah. I mean,
can we beep that out?
Bleep me out, boys.
Well, I appreciate Michael joining us. He has a great story to tell. Again, Vidito761 at Twitter, or on Twitter. Look him up at his blogs, Cubicle Farmer Refugee.
Yeah.
Got
we'll
that right, finally.
We'll queue up all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we'll queue that all up. Make sure you follow him along his journey.
We'll definitely have him back on soon.
Sure. And you can always get a hold of him too if you're looking for someone to come speak at your next event.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like I said, get him on Twitter. That's how you can contact him directly.
Yep.
So next episode, we have this is a week of firsts.
Right.
We have our first farmer profile on Tuesday. That's what we just did. And then also tomorrow, we're going to have our first roundtable.
Roundtable discussion.
And just kind of a free for all, see where it goes. Bringing a couple guys in, and Michael will be back here for us for that. And then again, we'll have Michael Cavan from DMZ here in Ainsworth, Iowa. So it'll be interesting to see first time cover cropper and to see kind of where he's at versus, you know, a guy that's Michael's
too many Michaels.
Too many Michaels, yeah.
Yeah. Michael 1 and Michael 2 tomorrow. So, anyways, cool. Thanks for joining us. And we'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Thanks, guys. Sometimes life's a cake.